ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
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 यम
मन्यसे
मातुलेयं प्रियं मित्रं सुकृत्तमं अकरो सचिवं दूतं सहृदाद् अथ सारथिं यं मन्यसे मातुलयं प्रियं मित्रं सुहृत्तमम् अकरो सचिवं दूतं सहृदाद् अथ सारथिं Yam,
yam,
the person.
Manyase,
you think. Matuleyam, maternal cousin.
Priyam,
very dear.
Mitram, friend.
Suhritamam,
ardent well-wisher.
Akaro,
executed.
Sachivam,
council.
Dutam,
messenger.
Sauridat,
by goodwill.
Atha,
thereupon.
Saratim,
charioteer.
Translation. O King, that personality whom, out of ignorance only, you thought to be your maternal cousin, your very dear friend, well-wisher, counselor, messenger, benefactor, etc., is that very personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna. Purport. Lord Sri Krishna, although acting as the cousin, brother, friend, well-wisher, counselor, messenger, benefactor, etc., of the Pandavas, was still the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Out of his causeless mercy and favor upon his unalloyed devotees, he performs all kinds of service, but that does not mean that he has changed his position as the absolute person. To think of him as an ordinary man is the grossest type of ignorance. So Bhishma Dev is giving some instruction here to Yudhishthira Maharaj that Yudhishthira Maharaj is thinking that there's a problem in the material world. It's difficult. There's some anxiety. But we see that this anxiety is not really founded. If we can catch things in connection with Krishna, then it takes on a whole different kind of mood, whole different mentality. The difficulty comes is when we don't see things in connection with Krishna, then seemingly they become very real to us. Right? With practice, with time, with purity, then those that are things that are not in connection with Krishna then seem illusory. And that which is in connection with Krishna then seems real. But otherwise, the tendency is to become absorbed. Whatever you're absorbed in, that becomes the experience. That becomes what's important. Because experience is what the living entity functions within. That's the field. The intelligence is used to identify the field, to see the elements of the field, to know what elements go with what elements and what results you'll get from that. But the actual experience that one gains, that is actually what is considered substance. Right? Everything else is not substance. Does that make some sense? Right? We'll think our money has meaning, our house has meaning, our facilities, our car, our position, none of that has any meaning. Right? Those are elements of the field. The real field is the experience that you will gain from dealing with those things. Right? This is the first, it's the first major step in self-realization. As we have to understand is that all these things actually don't have any meaning. Even for Krishna, it doesn't have any meaning. What is, has meaning is what is gained in the interaction. Right? You have a nice car. Fine. But unless someone notices it, what does it matter? So it's not really the car. It's that somebody mentions it. Oh, nice car. That's what has meaning to you. So all the time you spent buying the car, getting the money to buy the car, choosing the car, going around and figuring out which one you want, then breaking in the car, maintaining the car, paying the petrol, having the garage, you know, making sure you get no nicks and dings all over it. All that has meaning when someone tells you, nice car. Otherwise it doesn't have any meaning. So this is important to note. Otherwise we work very, very hard in developing this whole range of activities in the field. A range of, you know, facilities. But actually, it's the experience that's gained that has meaning. So that experience, that's called rasa. That's what the living entity looks for. That's what Krishna looks for. Right? Otherwise, why should Krishna expand the material creation? It's Him, whether it's manifest or not. Does that make sense? Means it's Him. He can manifest it or not. He doesn't manifest it. It still exists and he still gets taste from it. But when he expands it, then he can interact in it. That's rasa. Atmarama means self-satisfied. Nothing to gain, nothing to lose. Right? But when things expand because of rasa interaction, then taste is gained. So that's what everybody works for. And probably anybody, but especially devotees, they can benefit because they have the foundation to understand we're not the body, we're not these facilities. It's something we hear regularly, and yeah, I've been there, done that, I heard that. Yeah, when I was a new bhakta. But the point is when you realize that, then you'll understand this is where things start. Atato Brahma Jigyasa means where it starts. Before that, it hasn't started. Right? We do so many things, have so many positions, have so much facility. It hasn't started. When you ask, what does this have to do with Krishna? How to engage this in Krishna's service? That starts it. Right? That's called devotion. Otherwise, it's technically called Agyata Sukriti. Right? But this is very technical, and that point is not pushed. Right? The acharyas will not push this point, because whatever is connected to bhakti is considered as good as bhakti. But the point is those conscious moments where you're doing something in connection to Krishna, technically that's bhakti. And those moments you're not, you're getting benefit from it. You're moving forward. But it's called this Krishna consciousness. So when you're conscious, that's when you're really getting the benefit. When you're not conscious, you're getting benefit because it's connected to Krishna. But it's not dynamic. Right? It's not. Therefore, because it's not dynamic, we have to get a taste. And where is our taste? In the facilities of the field. I have that, and we will see devotees will fight over position, fight over facility. They'll ruin relationships, destroy their interactions with devotees over these foolish things. Right? This is what we do. And if you look, that's what the karmis are doing. Okay, karmis you can understand. They don't know what's going on. Devotees, okay, you can also understand. They've been doing it for unlimited births, so naturally we'll do it more. But if we really want to move on, we have to look at it. That's the first thing. It's not that. It's behind that. Right? So that's the point. Right? Isn't it? We have to understand we're energy. Energy then means the experience is what's important. everything else is connected with it. Even for the energetic, but we don't worry about that. That's his business, right? There's one energetic. Everything else is energy. Right? So, how seriously do you take? Like, okay, you have the man. He's experienced, the mature grihastha. Right? His wife says one thing, means something else. He gets all bent out of shape. Right? So is that the mature, experienced grihastha? No. Right? He knows. She says this, she means that. Right? So, in other words, what's spoken is just a medium. In fact, the thing itself that is spoken is only a medium. Right? Is this too subtle, or it needs something more? Right? You understand? So the point is it's not that. It's a medium through which the experience is going to be gained. Right? And then it works nicely. The experience is good. But if you get caught up in the externals, oh, you said that, a logic doesn't apply, and what you want to do actually still isn't what you're trying to gain. Then will the person be happy? Will the experience be good? No, it can't be. Because on the intellectual platform, that's not where there is any experience. Right? That has to be understood. There is no experience on the intellectual platform. Because intelligence means it decides, okay, there are four windows on this side of the room and two doors. But we could say, so that means you have two categories. Right? But you could say how many openings in the wall. You could say six. They're all one category. That's intelligence. You put them all together, you break them apart. But there's not the experience. The mind likes to do that. That's where the experience lies. So the experience is in the mind. It's not in the intelligence. Intelligence is used to gain a good experience. Right? That's why spiritual life has to be founded on intelligence, even in the material world. If it's founded on intelligence, then one gets a better experience. Does this make sense? Right. So, then, therefore, how intelligent are we when we get so caught up in the opulences of the material world and fighting for these opulences? Right? We're willing to destroy the very thing that we actually are trying to gain, is the experience of interaction, the experience of relationship. But we're willing to destroy that for the thing that is a medium for the experience. Does that make sense? So this has to be understood. If this is understood, then you can start to create proper interaction. Like that. Otherwise, it won't happen. It can't happen. That's why our methods are different from the materialist. The materialist, things go great. You look at a community. You have a community of people. They're all working together. That's only the modes of nature. It has nothing to do with what they're doing. The modes make it happen. The modes make it not happen. So that's, you want to try that? Great. But then you have to have people that have similar modes. Right? And you go. You'll see, generally, one community is from one place. Sometimes they're from here and there. But there is definitely a very common set of values. So then they function together. And much of the time you'll see very much same social strata, same country they're from, same language, same background experience. They watch the same movie, saw the same, heard the same music, ate the same food, wear the same clothes. So therefore, on the basic platform, they get along. Then just add in a little bit of effort, and okay, you have a community. Right? So you take something that you have people from every strata in life, and there's no question that they would even look at each other, let alone talk to each other, let alone interact with each other. Because, and that's what you're dealing with in a spiritual society. So, unless you take a spiritual solution, there is no question that anyone anywhere can be successful in creating community. It's impossible. Write it in your book. You know? Write it in your book. It cannot happen. Because you don't have the modes of nature together that will make it happen. You understand? So the only way people have come to this movement for spiritual life, the only way you'll make it work is through spiritual methods. There is not an alternative. Devotees have been trying it since 87. They've been working very hard. I don't see any results. 96, the big family, yes, you know, Prabhupada's family. I haven't seen the society go down as badly as it has since that time. Right? If you look at it, realism, we want to be real, right? Because today that's the thing. Be real, Prabhu, you know, look at it and realistically. Let's look at it realistically. The more we get into looking at it realistically, the worse it gets. You know, it was better when it was worse, right? You know, back, you know, nobody knew anything, and all the new Haribol bhaktas and used to harass each other and bother each other. It was better then, right? And now I'm sophisticated, very pukka, do everything nice, all the little emails, everything very, very nice. You know, don't use capital letters. You know, all these nice things. And everything's getting better, right? Better for who? Better for Kali. Not for us. Right? So this is the thing, is we have to understand is these methods, that's why we have Bhagavatam. Bhishma is laying on a bed of arrows. Right? That's not the ordinary situation. Yudhishthira has just been made emperor of the world after having spent, you know, 14 years in the forest. But to get there, 640 million people were killed. So it's not an ordinary situation. So how do they start off finding a solution to all of their problems? Right? They all got a problem. Bhishma's got a problem. Yudhishthira's got a problem. They start off first identifying Krishna. Right? They point out who they are, right? That there is problem. Right? Material world means problem. Right? You think you got a problem, Yudhishthira. What about your mother? Right? Okay, you're in the forest for 14 years, but at least you're with your brothers and with your wife. She was living in Hastinapur with all your enemies. That's where she was. You got your wife. She lost her husband when you were a kid. So you think you got it bad. What about her? And why is it like that? Okay, you got it bad because you had the gambling match. Okay, so at least you can go, okay, I'm the idiot. But your mother's got it bad because you lost the gambling match. She didn't do anything wrong. Right? So who's suffering here? Who's the victim? Right? Right? So it's an age-old thing. Find the victim, right? That's the new game, right? Find the victim. Who is the victim wins. 100 points. So, Kunti's the victim. Right? She didn't do anything wrong. She was a good wife. Did everything properly. Okay, Karna was a problem. But, you know, other than that, you know, she did everything right. You know? Like that. But, you know, everyone has a bad day. You gotta give them a break. So that was her bad day. So then, yeah. So then that's understood. Okay. So now we understand. Okay, we have to deal with this. Now we point out Krishna. So then this brings us to the next platform. Is that in dealing with the male, right? We've just discussed the female. Right? Because we're the female, right? We're the energies. Krishna's the male. The male principle then is the superior principle. But because of the need for interaction, the need for rasa, need not meaning it's different need than for energy. That's why it's hard to explain. Purusha is independent, so they're satisfied. But to increase that pleasure, which is natural, because Satchidananda, Nanda means pleasure, it's always increasing. So to increase it, then we're expanded. So in one sense, there's a need. At the same time, there's no need. But energy has to interact, because if it doesn't exist. Right? The Brahman platform means non-existence for the living entity. That's why it's called spiritual suicide. Because it's non-existence. We exist, but it's basically as good as not existing. We have to interact. Krishna doesn't. He's independent. He cannot interact and be happy. If he interacts, he's more happy. We don't interact, we're not happy. So for us, it's a need. It is our prayojana. We have to have that need of love of God. Otherwise, it won't function. Right? It's our prayojana. We see this sambandhavidaya prayojana. Krishna doesn't. It's all him. Right? We see it. We have to have it. So then, here, then he deals with the energy very kindly. Here he is. What is it? Maternal cousin, dear friend, well-wisher, counselor, messenger, benefactor, etc. All those things. He doesn't have to do any of those. He's God, right? But he does. But the point being made here is, don't forget that he's God. This is the problem. Yudhishthira has forgotten he's God. Right? You know, it means we're talking Yudhishthira's forgotten he's God, like Arjuna's forgotten, you know, Krishna consciousness on the battle of Kurukshetra, you know, the Gita. It's created by the Lord for so that we get the benefit of hearing these instructions. So he's forgotten he's God. So it's just he's dealing with all the elements in the field. Right? But he's leaving out that God is the controller of the field. So therefore, he's got all this mess on his hands, and therefore, you know, the prestige, the position, the mercy, the kindness, the, you know, so many people, right? 640 million people killed, right? Now, we're not talking here women and children, right? This is a Vedic war. They have it out in the field, right? We're not counting the horses, but, you know, like that. But the people, 640, they have family, right? Kshatriyas and Kshatriyas' assistants aren't known for being celibate, right? They're generally married. And some of them married many times. That doesn't mean one after the other. That means simultaneous. So that's big family. That's a lot of dependents. So 640 million people are dead, but how many are crying? You're talking billions. Right? So this is weighing on Yudhishthira's mind. But he forgets Krishna in the whole equation. So Yudhishthira's, Bhimshma is pointing this out. You can't forget Krishna in the equation. You forget Krishna, you don't have an equation. You know? It's like figuring out how you're going to get your, you know, thirst quenched out of the mirage that you see right in front of you. Looks pretty good, but it doesn't exist. You can't get to it. You seem to get to it, you never do. You really think about it, you never get to what you're actually trying to get to. Because it doesn't exist. Not that you can, oh, I just work a little hard. It doesn't exist. That's the problem. Right? So now, we have to put this in place so that, one, we don't lose faith in interaction, right? Because if we say very strongly, it has no meaning, then the first thing is, oh, well, why am I doing it anyway? Throw it out. Okay, nice. You know, easy, a simple conclusion. Solves the problem immediately. But the problem is the jiva can't function without it, without interaction. So it means you have to replace it. So that means replace it means spiritual body, spiritual place, dham, spiritual everything, everything's chintamani, and the interactions are spiritual. That's the replacement. That works. We can relate to that, and we can relate to the material world. What do we do in between? What do we do from shraddha to prema? Right? Once we get the prema, problem solved. Before shraddha, we're so much in ignorance, we think it's going on. Great. Right? We will have a solution. What do we do in between? Right? It says the idiot and the Paramahamsa, they're happy. It's everybody in between that has the problem. Right? So, I mean, sorry the generalization, but, you know, basically most of us we would expect would be in that, identify in that category. Right? Of course, if one is a Paramahamsa oneself, one sees everyone else as a Paramahamsa, and oneself is the fool. But unfortunately, you know, being realistic, we're not on that platform. So, whatever it is, we're the fools, right? We're the idiots here. So, what are you going to do in between? We don't have a spiritual body. We don't see the transcendental nature of the things we're dealing with, at least here. What are you going to do? But we can't go on with material life. That's useless. So how do you bridge that gap? That is the important point. That is the elusive element of Krishna consciousness. That if you don't catch that, it all doesn't make sense. Because you have to understand, is it will make more sense for others. Because the line is very, very obvious, very straight. It's one. It's two. It's one or it's two. You can look at it either way. It's a book, but it's always made out of paper. It's made out of wood. Okay, I can look at it both ways. Right? It's obvious. You perform your varnashram duties, do them perfectly, you know, try to please the Lord, go back to Godhead. Simple. Right? Easy. You got your rules, you got your regulations, that's what it is. You do it, you try to please God, bingo. Right? You go back to Godhead. Right? But that's great for Vaikuntha. But you want to get to Vrindavan, that's another thing. See, Vaikuntha, God is there. You're there, you offer your prayers to Him, you're with Him, and all those things. Nice. Great. Awe and reverence is what's happening, it's going on. Great. But in Vrindavan, it's slightly different. Right? You have, what's that one? That one rasa, it's like pepper and yogurt and rock candy and prema vaichitya. It's seven absolutely contradictory rasas happening at one time. How do you explain it? Radha and Krishna are sitting together, and even though they're sitting, Radha is sitting on top of his lap, they each think they're gone. And they're crying. Prema Saroba is manifest. How do you get that? You don't get that in Vaikuntha. Vaikuntha is very obvious. Here's God, I'm His servant, you know, there's Lakshmi, His eternal consort, and here I am offering prayers. Very obvious. But you want to get into Braj, there has to be some subtlety. How are you going to do that? Apply that subtlety? We have brains, right? That's there. So at least we have to intellectually try to identify it. And then we can try to identify it through taste, through rasa. Right? The experience. We can tell this difference, the subtle difference. Sometimes it's, you know, Krishna is so powerful, it's so obvious. You know? But in any case, the subtleties are there. And subtleties elude us. Right? Because in Krishna consciousness, things shouldn't progress past, you know, 26th Second Avenue. But as far as our material life and social life and economic life, then we have to be cutting edge. You know, cutting edge means 5 years behind the karmas. Right? That's the definition of the ISKCON cutting edge. Like that. Okay, 3 years. I should be more liberal. Like that. It's like Baba said, what Bengal does today, you know, the rest of the world does tomorrow. So what the rest of the world does today, you know, does today, you know, ISKCON will be doing later. So, like that. But, therefore, we can learn metaphysics from the karmis, from people who don't even know what metaphysics are. Right? They can tell some energies move easy enough, right? People sit down, pay big money. How the energy moves, this, that. You go to Aikido class. The first lesson they start with is, okay, how to move the energy. First lesson. You can't figure that out, forget the rest of the course. You go to other martial arts, it's the last thing they teach you. First you do all these punching, kicking, this, that, and when you get that down and it's smooth and the mind is not involved, then they'll start to see now within this you see the energy is moving. That's the real power. Right? But, so it's different. So unless we can understand these subtle, we'll go to them, the karmis. We'll read books by them. We'll have seminars by them. But our own metaphysics, forget it. Keep it simple. Prabhupada made it simple. That's nonsense. That means whoever stated that doesn't even know what metaphysics is. The most subtlest, detailed, technical analysis of devotional process and result is given in these books. Just Prabhupada is so kind that he uses English to explain it. Right? Others seems more technical because they don't bother. They just leave it in its technical terms. Prabhupada says, how, now, can anyone here say they didn't hear of the term spontaneous devotional service from practically the day they joined ISKCON? Right? Who never heard that term? Raise your hand. Okay, everyone heard it, right? Okay, but if we say Raganuga Bhakti, oh, see, something special. Prabhupada never gave that. Okay, translate Raganuga Bhakti into English, called spontaneous devotional service. Right? So this is the point. Someone who knows can see everything here. Jiva Goswami in his Tattva Sundarbha says that in every verse of Bhagavatam, these are just the obvious ones. These are just the ones he's pointing out. Every verse has three meanings. One, the direct. Two, the indirect. And three, the hidden. And we see Lord Chaitanya took one verse, gave 64 meanings. And that's, he just stopped, because otherwise Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya's head will crack. Right? That's it. You can go on. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur spoke on the first verse of Bhagavatam for 90 days, and each day was a different lecture. It wasn't just subtly a little different. You know, it wasn't like, okay, let us make, we'll make 1,008 preparations for Krishna today on Janmashtami. Okay, so what are we going to do? Well, one, we'll make a ton of sandesh, and then we're going to get out 20 different food colorings and put it in. And in this way, now we got 20 preparations. Haribol. Okay, not like that. It wasn't classes like that. This was completely different lectures. Completely different. Does that make sense? Completely different. So, this is just what's given. So much is there. You can read it. Prabhupada points out, and our translators always, you know, for our benefit, drop. If you want to know, let's say, like in Brihad Bhagavatamrita, what's not there from the commentary. What's not there is the grammatical analysis. That's the only thing that's not there. Everything else will be there. So when our translators, they translate all the things, but they leave out the grammatical analysis. Because in the grammatical analysis is where the hair splitting of the metaphysics goes on. When they get into the real heavy elements of logic and grammar, that's when they get into the things. But how many here find grammar? Grammar is their favorite subject, right? No? Okay, a half-hearted, almost one hand went up. Like that. So we understand it, so therefore it's left out. But what is important, Prabhupada points out, he says, in this verse, this word is important. That's because the acharyas have made a great effort to explain that word, because if you understand that word in this verse, you understand the point that's trying to be made. Does that make sense? Right? Oh yeah, we're still trying to get down to the point here. Before we lose it, in case I lose it, what we're trying to point down is that out here is that the living entity has to be grateful for the interaction that God does with us, because He's the Supreme Lord and independent, but He takes the effort to come into our life, daily life, and be involved in it, right? That's the point that's being, one of the points that's being made here. So up to now, everything's been the preliminary to that. So Krishna, He comes into the life. He's in it. Oh, that's what we're talking about. Is that bridge, right? The subtlety. So that bridge is Krishna. Because we don't have a spiritual body. We have a material body, right? We don't have a spiritual house. It's made out of bricks and cement like every other house around. Right? Everything we have that we deal with, except the deity and the holy name, the Dham, these few things, these five main things, everything else we're dealing with is directly hardcore material energy. It's just dead matter. Earth, water, fire, air, ether, and subtle. Mind, intelligence, policy. That's it. Now, what do? Because spiritual means not that. It's just the spiritual elements. Spiritual body, spiritual dham, spiritual active. What are we going to do? This is the point. Gita is making this point. Here it's being applied. Right? This is the opening of the Bhagavatam. Right? The Bhagavatam, as spoken by Sukadeva, starts in the second canto. This first canto is making it prepared that we're ready for it. Right? Because these are answering the sage's questions. How was it spoken? What's going on? So now, here is that bridge even here between the two. In Sanskrit, this is called Sangati. There must be a connection. Every word in the verse must have sangati with the other words to make sense. Right? Every verse has to have sangati with all the other verses in that group of verses that is dealing on a point. That group of verses has to have sangati with the chapter with the book with the other Vedic literatures. Right? So here we're seeing the sangati of the Gita and the Bhagavatam. Krishna says, do your work for Him. So that's the key. You have the material energy. You want it to function and give you a spiritual result. Material elements operated materially give you a material result. Right? How are you going to get spiritual out of it? Nothing material can create anything spiritual. Right? One of the first lessons of bhakti. Bhakti comes from bhakti, nothing else. We didn't become a devotee because we were that self-searching, you know, pothead, you know, stone hippie, you know, listening to, you know, pleasant music that we thought we were the great spiritualist, and that's why we came to Krishna consciousness. Nothing to do with it. Bhakti comes from bhakti. Somehow or another you bumped into devotees, saw devotees, somehow or another turned to God, took prasad, heard the holy name, read a book. It had nothing to do with our mundane intelligence. But the desire to know God, that's spiritual. That will create it. Had nothing to do with the long hair and, you know, all that. Nothing. Bhakti doesn't come from anything else. So how will we engage the material energy and get bhakti? Because engaging material energy will only give you more material energy. So only give if it's empowered by the chit potency. So when the chit potency is there and it's done to please Krishna, that is called bhakti. Right? When Hladini and Samvit are combined, that combination is called bhakti. That's what the bhakti shakti is. Right? So using the intelligence to engage in devotional service to please Krishna, that is bhakti. Now, for our platform, where we're not on the platform of prema, then that's called buddhi yoga. Right? Buddhi yoga means using the intelligence, performing the activity for Krishna. That's the bridge. That's where the subtlety is. This is real metaphysics. How are you going to take everything in your life that's material and connect it to Krishna? So right here, the first thing Bhishmadeva is doing, after he deals with him emotionally, just that he lets him know that I understand where you're coming from. Once that's established, now there's ready for discussion. Right? Because if you think the other person doesn't understand, you're not open for discussion. They may say gems of wisdom, you won't listen to it. Until they, you know, I say, feel what you feel. Right? Then only you're willing to listen. So he first does that. That's Niti Shastra. Right? That's just straight Artha Shastra. That's diplomacy. So then, what's next? Next, now we get down to the real point. Now he's listening. So now he starts talking first Krishna. You're thinking Krishna is just your friend, your well-wisher, this and that. He's God. You've forgotten about him. You're not seeing Krishna in connection with this. This is Krishna's plan. He's come here to destroy the demons. You know, and because you're his dear devotees, he did it through all of you. Right? Who gets the credit at the Battle of Kurukshetra? Who does everyone glorify? Arjuna, not Krishna. Krishna killed everyone. That's obvious in the beginning. Before it starts, then Arjuna sees the universal form. Everybody's being killed already. Time has already destroyed them. But the credit goes to Arjuna because of Krishna's need for rasa. He is God. He doesn't have to prove it to anybody. Right? It's just like you have at a party. You have the people who are generationally rich at the party. Right? And they're there dressed very simply and everything and very humble and just sitting around the corner and what's happening to go with. And who walks in, you know, dressed to the teeth and, you know, talking it up and trying to get in with everybody in all the right places, dropping all the right names, right? The person, the nouveau riche, right? The new guy. Does that make sense? So God is the, you know, how you say the... Yeah, the establishment. He's the old, you know... You know, how you say, what's the word? Yeah, the old money. Yeah, you know, it's like from the beginning. All the money comes from him, in fact, right? Like, you know, Reserve Bank has nothing on him, right? So then, so he doesn't have to prove that he's God. So for him, it's fun taking another form. So therefore, he comes as the friend, the well, but he doesn't have to prove. He can do all these things and be God. So this is the things we have to be able to see Krishna in everything we do. We have to bring Krishna into it. And that doesn't mean just, yeah, Krishna's there, yeah, now what about the reality? No, that is the reality. You don't, if that statement is stated by someone who doesn't understand what we're talking about. It's being said by someone who doesn't understand metaphysics. They don't understand how the mind works, the intelligence works, the ego works. They don't know how the modes of nature work. They don't know how the earth, water, fire, air, and ether work. That's how everything works. Right? That's how it's going on. Right? People got to make money. Nowadays, modern money is what? Is it gold? No. It's the stock market. How does the stock market function? Right? People's whims. What operates the whims? The modes of nature. Through what? The planets. Right? So our reality check, you know, on, you know, the modern situation is based on a bunch of idiots, whether they buy and sell according to which way the modes of nature are moving them. Right? That's metaphysics. So if you really want to know what's going on, and if you understand that and what's going on, then you know, oh, okay, the moon's here, the market's going up. Oh, the moon's there, the market's going down. So you're held. Oh, because you ate the wheat grass, or you jogged, or you did this or that, right? You know, after 20 years, they'll find out that that was the highest cause of cancer around, right? All these things. Whatever it is, if it's not connected with the Veda, the knowledge, then it doesn't work. Maybe by accident they got something right. But things that they said before, that this is gospel, then the next day they say it's wrong. So they're dabbling in metaphysics, get something. It may give some result today, but you don't know what the result is tomorrow. No idea. Prabhupada wrote an article in 1955. I read it. I've never seen it again. Prabhupada was talking about, the main point he was saying, your health or your, how you say, the body's functioning based on vitamins and minerals has absolutely nothing to do with the intake of vitamins and minerals. It has to do with how your body digests it. You eat the right food for the human being, and your health is proper, then your body's going to break it down anyway. It doesn't matter what you take in the way of sugars. Your body's going to turn it into glucose. You take fructose, you take maltose, you take glucose, sucrose, right? It's going to turn it into glucose. So you don't have to take glucose to get glucose in your body. You take one, it turns. Does that make sense? So Prabhupada's point is you take a cow, you feed it dry straw, right? Right? You ever seen dry straw getting a high rating on the nutrition list? Right? Right up there in the top, right? All the vitamins, minerals, like that. You know, our vitamins are full of dry straw, the most important source of all vitamins and minerals, right? If you can't get spirulina, then at least get dry straw. You know, it's the best. You know? Isn't it? Does that work? Right? Yes? No? No. So that's Prabhupada's point. You give that to the cow, right? And you wait a few hours and you get milk that's high in all vitamins, minerals, protein, whatever you need. You can live off of milk. It's the original complete food, right? The original dietary supplement. Right? So his point is it's happening because the cow is eating the right food for itself. Does it make sense? So that's the point is, therefore, what do the karmis actually know of metaphysics? They don't know. They observe, they get some ideas, that some of it works, but some of it doesn't work. Right? After World War I, they had all these factories, they were busy making mustard gas, this gas, that gas, and bombs and stuff. And then the factories closed down, and they had tons of these nitrates that they made their bombs and stuff out of, just sitting around in piles. Somebody visited the site, it's a government site. They came and visited after a long time, and there were these huge, lush plants growing on these nitrates. Right? Bingo! Okay, now open the factories again, now we'll produce nitrates for putting in the field, right? And then when it's war, they'll produce bombs, It's like you make money whether the market's going up or down. It doesn't matter, right? So then they did it. So it looks great. Yeah? But so many years after introducing that, then they found that what is produced from the fields, the percentage of what is in them is less. Right? It's just like this. I say, okay, you have 30 milliliters of rose sarbat. Okay, now you mix that in one glass of water and you get a great drink. Right? And it's got a taste. Okay, but for someone who's never tasted it, you could put two glasses of water. Right? And then they'll taste, it has a subtle, very subtle drink, a very subtle rose flavor, right? Someone who knows what sarbat does, they'll go, hey, where's this? We didn't put enough syrup. So that's the point. The plant can only produce so much beneficial things. You can make it bigger, but it still have the same amount of benefit in it. Right? Ayurveda's the same. According to Shastra, in a particular place, at a particular season, you can harvest a particular amount of herbs and make a particular amount of medicine. If you make more than that, you can make more. You can make 10 times the recommended amount that you can make, but it'll only have 1/10 the potency. Right? That's why when you go to people who make their own medicine, it has more potency than when you buy the commercially bought, unless the commercial people are very careful not to exceed that limit, which most aren't. Does that make sense? So potency remains the same. You increase the volume, but you can take that 30 milliliters of rose syrup and pour it into a pokor, big pond. But it's still, you only have 30 milliliters, so the same thing. So this is the point. They observe something, they get something, but they don't know the complete picture. So therefore, what benefit's going to be there? So, and unless we understand how to connect it to Krishna, Krishna's got to come into everything. And that means You have to explain. You say Krishna's there. Explain it. Then what will you get from at that point? Generally an emotional explosion. You know, who are you to tell me, I've been here, I did this, well, I did that. Okay, great, fine. But at least realize you don't know what you're talking about. Strong sentiment, great. But can you explain it? No. Have you thought about it? No. Why? Because everything should be just as Prabhupada did it, just as simple and as all that, but at the same time as my own personal life is very complex. How do you bridge the gap? There is no bridge. So there's a gap. And when there's a gap, there's duality. When there's duality, it's mundane. Spiritual means the two have been bridged. There is no gap. Right? Mind the gap. Right? So that's the point. We're letting the gap get too big. Right? Because the bridge, the Gita can bridge any gap. But we don't use it. Okay, we read that. No, but do we use it? Everything in our life should be connected. There's not, you think that everything we do should be connected to Krishna. It can even have a generalized connection, but it still has to have that. You know? Does that make some sense? Okay, I take a bath. Why? Because you take a bath, then you're properly clean. Why be clean? Because then in the association of the devotees and Krishna, then we must be clean. Why is that? Because Krishna likes things clean. Why does he like things clean? Because he's the supreme pure, so he only deals with things that are pure. Right? And if you understand that, then you're actually taking a bath and cleaning your nails, all this, and it all makes sense. At the same time, it also makes sense, Om Apavitra Pavitrova. Just thinking of Krishna, you're purified. Because the point, if the mind's pure, the gross comes from subtle. The mind's pure, everything else is pure. Or you can make everything else pure to get the mind pure. Point is you have to get the consciousness. Consciousness is pure, you have everything. Therefore, the Uttamadhikari doesn't have to follow the rules because he's already attained what you're supposed to get by the rules. So either way, you can explain it, subtly or grossly. And do either of those explanations fly? Do devotees like to hear those? No. The other's too subtle, or, you know, this is too fishy. Or the other one, too technical. We may unless. So, where do we stay? In the gap. That's why you have to mind it. There's so many devotees in there, you don't want to step on anyone's head, you know. Like that, you know, it's like that. So it's like, you got to look for where there's a gap, you know. Where's the gap in the gap? Then we'll make it. I don't know where I was, just somewhere where everything is one shop, everything, all they sold was Mind the Gap t-shirts and posters. Oh, that was in London. Okay. Oh yeah, the Heathrow. Okay, yeah. What's this? What gap? This is the point, is we have to understand this is our heritage, this is our philosophy. We take it works. It's working for Yudhishthira. We don't have more of a problem than Yudhishthira. Definitely can't say we have more of a health problem than Bhishma Day, right? Like that. No one can say, no, I'm in a more critical condition. I mean, he's critical, right? It means you can't put two fingers between any arrow in his body. So the gap is less than that. Like that, you know. But he's not minding the gap. So, yeah. So then if that's there, then we have to see is that Krishna has to be brought in. Right? You may wonder, all this blabber. Okay, so now here's the point we're trying to get to. Krishna has to be brought into everything. And we can't take him for granted. This is one of the number one defects of a dependent, is they always take who they're dependent upon for granted. The child takes the parent for granted, women take the men for granted, the common person takes the leaders for granted, and everybody takes God for granted. So that's the point, is he's pointing out you can't take him for granted. So therefore, he's always to be included in everything you do. No matter how routine it is, no matter how external it is or internal, if Krishna is there, then there is no such thing as the normal good and bad. Right? You talk to a child is crying. You just come up to him and say, hey, quit being a stupid child, why don't you get it together? Right? Anybody will do that? Maybe some people do that, but anybody who gets results? No. They'll talk nice, they'll change the tone of voice, they'll do everything, and oh, what happened, and all that. That's called diplomacy. That's politics. Right? But it's properly applied at the right place, for the right situation, according to the laws given by God, and it's fine. It works. So now you're connected to Krishna. Why do that? Because Krishna said this is the way it's done. Well, why even deal with it at all? Because, you know, you're dealing with devotees or you have a responsibility or something. Right? You have to find that connection. Then anything connected to Krishna is good. That's the problem with the karmis. Blanket, everything's bad. Just like in the Shastra, right? It's a blanket thing. All bones are impure, including conch shells, right? Yes? No. All stool is impure, including cow dung, right? That's the point. That's the problem with the modern. It's blanket. Therefore, it has to be wrong. Guaranteed the karmis are wrong because it's blanket. So they can't be right. Because there's always exception. Right? Always exception. That's Krishna. That's Krishna. Krishna is the exception. He is the universe, but he's tied up by a rope by Mother Yashoda. Right? Like that. He's the greatest, but he's the smallest. Right? He walks, he does not walk, he's very close, but he's very far away. Right? So these are these subtleties of our philosophy, but written, you know, in Upanishadic language. So this is the point. We have to learn the language and learn what it is Prabhupada's saying. What does Krishna say? What's really going on here? It's a nice story, okay. But what about me, my real life? You know, okay, I got a mortgage to pay, I got this, that, wife got sick, you know, kids got to go to school, there's not enough money. You know, what about that? That's worse than what they got going on here? For us it is, yeah, of course, you know. But in reality, no. So if you can solve such, you know, if you can solve a 100 rupee problem with 100 rupees, you can surely solve a 10 paisa problem with 100 rupees. You know, it's going to work. We just have to take it. We just have to apply it. So this principle works in our spiritual life. We take Krishna for granted. It works in, you know, the hierarchy within the society, our management structure. It works. It works in the family unit. Right? It works in any relationship. Is if we take anyone for granted, that relationship is doomed to failure. You always have that point where you always respect the person's individuality. It works. Right? Does that make sense? That's directly here in the verse. But we will go to the karmis to hear that. And this is in the beginning. These are the grosser ones. Yes.
Taking for granted, that means...
Taking for granted.
Taking for granted, that means he thinks that he's dependent on us or something.
Does taking for granted means he depends upon us? Generally not. Generally, we're not so foolish to think God depends on us. But other relationships will do that. Wife will think husband depends upon them. Child will think... You know, that's common. Because... ownership means control, right? You can't be, as energy, we have two main problems, control and enjoyment, that's there, but this manifests as gain and safety, practically applied, right? Because if we say, why you're doing that, we won't say it's the controlling mood or the enjoying, no, we won't say that, because we're feminine, it's too gross, we'll settle it, make it subtle into it's gain or safety. Everyone will say, oh, that's okay. You know, he's making himself safe. Yeah, means safe means envy, right? Your position is that of servant of God. No, I want to control it myself. Then I'm safe, right? Why do you have bureaucracy? I mean, or why do you have committees? Because of, what do you call it? Where you feel unsafe? Insecurity, right? Everybody on that committee, not one of them is taking any responsibility, but everyone is claiming authority. They will tell everyone what to do. When push comes to shove, not one person in the room will take responsibility. Maybe as an individual, but not as a committee member. They want full authority, no responsibility. And that's supposedly mature. Right? Supposedly mature. It won't work, hasn't worked in any management system in history. And it won't work today either. It just can't work. But why is it done? Because of security. I don't feel secure. I don't trust anyone else. I want to be there. Therefore, again, then I can protect my gain. And I'm working hard. That's where the reality is, Prabhu. You got to gain. And then after that, then you got to make politics because you want to keep it secure. Sound familiar? Yeah. So this is the basic feminine principle. Gain and safety. Krishna, everything is his, and no one can bother him. He doesn't have a problem with gain and safety. Right? So that's the thing. In the reflection, the masculine principle has it less, the problem. It's there because the soul is feminine, but it's more hidden, it's more obvious in the female. So that's why Krishna in the Gita says, give up this endeavor for gain and safety and just depend upon him. That is essence. You give up gain and safety. Safety means I am his. Gain means whatever's gained is his also. So then you're working for him, for his pleasure. That's seeing Krishna as the maintainer, Krishna is the protector. Maintainer is gain, protector is safety. Right? And that's where you're trying to get to. Krishna is the maintainer, Krishna is the protector. Right? When we look at it from tattva, it's give up what's unfavorable, accept what is favorable. Right? Then see Krishna's maintainer, protector. Then you get in, you have the mood of identifying as a devotee. Then you come to the point of meek and humble, completely surrendered to Krishna. Right? But in application, and that's in tattva. That's explaining the philosophy. But in rasa, then it starts from the last two. Right? If you look, this is how Sharanagati by Bhaktivinoda Thakur is explained, because this is how it's going to work in your mind. First you identify as a devotee, then when you become humble, then you can give up what you should give up and accept what you should. Then you can come to the elevated platform of seeing Krishna as your maintainer and protector. Because Krishna is your maintainer and protector, then you have nothing to do with here. So you're out of here. That makes sense. So this giving up the need for gain and safety, this is essential culture. So here is the point. He's feeling anxiety. Why? He's not feeling safe. Why? Because he feels he's done something wrong. And then what's the result from doing something wrong? He's going to be in a heap of trouble. Right? He's afraid that the sin of killing all these people is going to come on his head. So that's a security problem. So the point is Krishna is your security. There's no need of something else. Right? That's where it's happening. So he's trying to point this out. So this is on this. Others will address the situation of gain. You want to gain something. Aditi wants to gain a child, so does Diti. Okay. Now, as we see it, you know, the Adityas are seen as what class of, you know, personages, and the Daityas are seen as what class? Right? They both had the same need. They were both wives of the same man. One had, you know, the Lord and the demigods, and the other had demons, simply because of their method. Right? One didn't deal with it in connection with Krishna, just simply was based on social need. My co-wife has a son, and I don't, therefore she's superior to me. I want that position. Right? Yes? And the husband, because of the method used by the wife, then he fell prey to it because he wasn't a devotee. Right? He fell prey to it, and therefore he got into the sense gratification. So hers was the control, the position, the safety, and his was the that. Right? So then you end up with Hiranya and Kashipu. Right? The direct manifestation of their consciousness. Right? That's the point. You want to study this point. Prabhupada says, the time of conception, that's the child you get. Just look at in here, because here you know their mentality. And then you see the child. Directly obvious. Right? So, you know, that's the thing. Karna. What was Karna's main problem? His prestige. That would burn him more than anything. What was the problem with the consciousness of both parents at the time of conception? Prestige. Kunti, is her thing is maintaining her virginity. And the sun god is, you know, he's not going to be called by some little girl on earth and come back, you know, empty-handed. And all the other demigods are going to say, wow, that girl there put you off? Woo-wee. You know, like that. He's in trouble. And so he says, hey, girl, it's happening. Otherwise, I'm going to take you and the guy who gave you the mantra, your whole family, and you're all going to be, you know, turned into frogs. You know, something's going to happen to you. So she goes, okay, you know. So the whole thing, it was all prestige. And the son, his only point is prestige. Right? So that's the point. Right? I think in Hungarian they say the apple doesn't fall very far from the tree. Right? So that's the thing. So the Bhagavatam, all these, they have the element of tattva, the philosophy, the direct philosophy. They have the element of rasa, right, on the pure, the transcendental platform. And they have the element of you apply that rasa within the material sphere, that you can connect to Krishna. You can not connect it to Krishna if you just want to be successful materialist, but you know, how long can you do that? So you connect it to Krishna, and then you go back to Godhead. Does that make sense? So, therefore, we should always be very, very careful, never taking it for granted, and never, you know, like that, and especially Krishna. You know? It means he's there, he comes and he'll deal with every aspect of our life. There's nothing that he won't deal with. There's nothing too small for him to get involved in. Right? It says, God is in the details, right? So if you look at it literally, it means he's in the details, right? He's in every atom, between every atom. So, like that. So he's willing to do it, but the point is if we're not willing to accept him, then okay, you do it yourself. Have fun, you know? You know, like the parents willing to help the small child. No, no, I do it myself. Okay, do it. And then when they fail, then, you know, they're crying. Then you come in. So that's the point. So as kids, then the crying is a little easier. As adults, it's a little bit harder, right? In the kids, they just get sad. But in adults, they go bitter. Like that. That's how you tell the difference between an adult and a child, is that the mess ups that the adults make due to their foolishness, then they become bitter over it. Because right? It's always someone else's fault, right? Guarantee it has to be, right? It can never be our fault, right? We're perfect. We're God. Right? So that's one of the differences. Okay. Any questions or comments? Or? Means applying
a benefit the individual immediately, so it's seen as uncompassionate.
Well, first of all, if you have a committee, then it works. It does have, as long as there's someone, a leader of that committee, and the the person, members of that committee, take responsibility for their decisions. And if they're not willing to, then they shouldn't be on the committee. Like Bhishma Dev, he doesn't agree with Dhritarashtra. He tells him what is, because he makes the decision. He goes with it. He's on the battlefield fighting for Dhritarashtra. He's not over there saying, "Well, he did. It wasn't me. You know, they voted for it. I didn't." That's men will say, "Yes, I made the maybe it's wrong like this, but I felt like this. This these are the reasons." And then if you convince them, okay, yeah, I'll change my mind. For the others, then it's just, you know, it's emotion. It's not intelligence. So the thing is the solution, depending on what it is, if it's emergency, then you definitely have to deal with immediate result. If it's not that at the same time as you can't do anything that in long run won't have, that will also be a problem there. Manu mentions that the king has to do things that he will be benefited and the people will be benefited. Right? So he's talking about, like, the example is given in tax. You can't not take any tax out of compassion and then not have any money to manage the kingdom so the whole kingdom folds. Same time, you can't tax too much because then the individuals won't prosper. And if they're not prospering, then they're not inspired. So then what's the use of a kingdom full of people in anxiety? So he has to find a balance. You know, like the bee is taking pollen. It doesn't take everything from one place. It takes a little from everywhere and then makes the honey. So the king also takes a little bit from here and there. So it means you have to get both. That's intelligence. See, there's one form of control. Just because it fell out of our mouth, then, you know, it has to happen. You know, let it be, what is it? Let it be written, let it be done, right? So that's, you know, that's fine if you're, you know, the emperor of Egypt. But, you know, didn't do him much good, right? You know, the Jews still won, you know. So, whatever. You know? So then, and you see there, is because they were having faith in God. So then, the solution must deal with all circumstances. And even if it doesn't completely deal with future, it should be compliant or compatible to a plan that it does. So it has to be transformable, right? It has to have that ability to transform from one to the next. But this thing, we'll just get it done now, that is, you know, that's just problem solving. Problem solving drives you nuts. You know, every manager in ISKCON that uses that is going nuts. And the solution is more, bigger bureaucracy and more problem solving. Right? So, you know, that's called vision. So, the thing is then one has to see is that if it doesn't do all spheres, means you don't know what you're dealing with. It means if you want to make a decision on something, you have to know the field. It's just like this. You start cooking something. One devotee was telling me he had a relative. And this relative was an expert chef. So, you know, besides doing his normal catering and stuff that he would do, sometimes he would be called in by other chefs when things just got out of hand. There was like emergency, big marriage, and they had to produce, and what they produced wasn't presentable. They'd call him in. He'd look around the kitchen, what they got, what everything's there, what facilities they have, and they'd say, "Okay, I'll take care of it under one condition. Everybody out of the kitchen." Right? Everybody leaves the kitchen, then in, you know, 20 minutes, half an hour, he comes out with this fabulous preparation that he's invented some name for, right? Because he's taken some completely blue preparation and turned it into something fabulous, you know? You know? So, like that. But the reason he can do that is he knows the field. So he's doing troubleshooting, but his troubleshooting actually solves the problem. And not only that, it creates a precedent that is useful in the future. Right? Like all your gulab jamuns, blue. Okay, then you break them up into pieces and make them into samosas. You know? And the kids love those samosas. They are. They're awesome. The kids Yeah. Like that. Like that. You make them fresh, it's cool. But know that that's what's in their sweet samosas in the sweet shops. Those are whatever is old and can't be used or falling apart. It all goes into the samosa. Right? So you have to create. So if you don't know the field, just because one has attachment doesn't mean that one has intelligence. That's a very important point. I would say many, many people make this point. Because they have attachment, that is their qualification. They're attached to women, therefore they know how to deal with them. They're attached to children, therefore they know. They're attached to position, therefore they know. They're attached to whatever it is, therefore they know. But it doesn't necessarily. It's not. Maybe that attachment will inspire them to make the endeavor to learn about the field. Then they'll be good at it. But it absolutely has nothing to do with the other. Right? Attachment's based on control. That's where the intelligence is. Right? So the mind is based on the intelligence. You have knowledge of the field, right? Then your attachment will bear fruit. But if you have attachment without, it's just sentiment. Right? So then you end up with Hinduism. Like that. Like that. And why we're in America's 263 or something million? Never gets to me. When I was a kid, it was the same. You know, it's like it doesn't get anywhere. So, like that. But you want to fit into that scene, right? Okay, throw in England and throw in Australia. Okay, then we get it up to what? We get it up to 300 million, 310 million. Okay, but there's over 1 billion Hindus, right? So if you want to fit in, much easier place to fit in. You just have to take the scriptures and be sentimental. Bing, you're in. You made it. You know, you're a Hindu. Right? You don't have to worry. And Hindu, come on. They run Silicon Valley. Everything. It's all happening. You know, it's like every time you call an 800 number, you're getting a person in India. Right? You want to have fun next time you call one up. And they start talking. Just ask them, are you in Bombay or are you in Bangalore? You know? No, yeah, yeah. Because that's where they all are. You know? And then you start a comment, you know, like that. So it's happening. So we want to fit in. We could be on the cutting edge of fitting in. Just become a Hindu, you know. It means we are acting like Hindus, but we don't identify it. We're like those lost, what is it, ABCDs, right? You know, that they don't know who they are, like that. You know, what is it? American-born confused Deshis. No. That's actually a term. Yeah, no, they even made a movie about it. Yeah. 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 That's what it means. They don't know who they are. They're trying to be. You know, it's just like this. You go to in America, different situations. You'll see most of the girls at one point in their life or day or situations will put their hair up. You know, it's easier. They're washing dishes. They'll put their hair up. They're going out to a formal occasion. They'll put their hair up. They're doing something. They put their hair up. But an American-born confused Deshi will die before they put their hair up. Because putting your hair up, tying your hair, means you're a Hindu. Because only Hindus tie their hair. So therefore, it means by principle, you cannot tie your hair. Then you're an American. So that's how devotees fit into modern karmi society. That's how they fit in. And I say that boldly. You know, and bring me the PR man who can defeat that point. Like that. So, this is why I want to fit in. The easiest place for us to fit in is with Hindus. I mean, that's where we're getting all our money. We do everything, you know, hodgepodge, you know, architecture and design. And, you know, it happens, you know. So, the point is unless you know the field, you cannot give a solution. Attachment's not enough. Or control's not enough. You have to have knowledge of the field. If you don't have knowledge of the field, that committee will fail. Guaranteed. So then you have to have people that know what they're dealing with. If they don't know what they're dealing with, it will not work. You can write it in your book. Okay. Whatever it is. It won't work. Because that's what everybody says. Both the karmis and the shastras say the same thing. Like that. They all say the same thing. Yes?
So, all of these principles that you're expounding upon require the acceptance of the individual used it, and therefore it spread down throughout a nice organization. So what to do in the meantime? It's a problem.
It's a problem.
How does it expand?
Well, the Vedic principle, which is opposite of the modern principle, is you start with the individual. Because a community is a group of individuals that have the same value system. If you look it up in a dictionary, that's what it'll say. So the Vedic system of training means you first train the individual who they are. Don't worry about who someone else is. Worry who you are. Second thing, once you know who you are, then you can understand who other people are. Then once you understand who other people are, then you can understand what is your relationship with those other people. That's the third step. Then the fourth step is if you can understand those three, then you can understand how to manage it. Right? Generally, the Western problem is they want to start with how to manage it. And therefore, they don't know who they are. First is figure out if every individual knows who they are, it'll work for them. Because the beauty of the system is it will work for the individual even if no one else follows it. Right? Lord said, this was Prabhupada's point to Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. How can we get into all these spiritual things until we've freed India? Bhaktisiddhanta says, what is it called? It means even you free India, you're still going to be bound. Right? Lord Chaitanya sat in Navadvip with the Muslim government. Right? Well, there was no free religion and free this. It was, you know, Muslim government that didn't like them to do what they were doing. They were somewhat tolerant. But even then, sometimes they get out of hand. Right? You know, Prabhupada, Bhaktisiddhanta, they were all preaching, and they were preaching in British India. British were trying their best to destroy the Indian culture. Right? It was a plan. It didn't just happen by like that. Funny thing is, because they don't know what they're doing, they destroy themselves. Right? It's a perfect example of people with a material vision. They thought, okay, we're not getting these people to submit to us because they have a different value system. If they develop our values, then they'll submit. So how to get them to value? By telling them no, by training them. Because up to that point, British schools are for Britons. The savages didn't go to the Christian school. So then they decided to, and then they said, but we can't open schools to everybody. So therefore, what will we do? Right? Everyone follows the leaders. So then they open their schools to selected members of the intellectual and aristocracy and nobility of India. And after 20 years, they were successful. Those people that came out had the same values. They had read the same books, were trained in the same way, had the same view, the critical eye. So therefore, they gave up that real seriousness on Vedic religion. But what they didn't realize is that now they had the same view of why we shouldn't be independent and do things ourselves, why we have to submit to these Britons. Well, they would submit before because that's the rule. It's a common person submits to the leader. So it doesn't matter who the leader is. Okay, it's been, moguls for the last so many thousand years. So what the heck? You know, some white guys for, a few hundred years. What does it matter? So then they don't care. So then by doing that, then they took on the same mentality. And that's when the Swaraj started, was in the 1850s. Right? It took them 100 years, but it started then. So that's a classic case of, trying to solve a material problem with a material solution. While they were having great results in managing Hindus by enforcing Manusamhita on them. They wouldn't use it for themselves. They had their own laws. English laws are for them, but the Manusamhita was for the people. They found it was the easiest way. It's scriptural, it's practical, it works. We just use it on them, it works. Like that. So British found it worked. But you have to have faith. So when the individual has faith and they apply it, it will work for them. Krishna consciousness worked for the Pandavas. Right? And they were in all kinds of situations with people who were absolutely not God conscious. Like that. So that's the thing. If we can accept that, that, you know, it starts, charity begins at home, then we'll get somewhere. But generally why it doesn't work is that whenever you have a meeting on, you know, social, social economic, right? Varnashram's out, right? That word, but whatever. Social economic development. Then the first thing is how to, you know, make those broad sweeping things that everyone's got to just follow, and then it'll work. No, how to train the individual. There's never a discussion of that. Never once. Absolutely no once. They never, how to train the individual. And that was Prabhupada's point, is once they got the devotees to the point where they valued, because if you value something, you want that for your children. So then Prabhupada made the ISKCON educational system, which meant training people in Vedic values. Then the children, then you spread it. But until there's that, the highest of two, then that individual, then they're there. Therefore Prabhupada said one of these kids is worth 10 sannyasis. Sannyasi is intellectually accepting, and gradually it becomes reality. The kids, that's them. Krishna consciousness is their culture. You want to follow it or not? That's another question. But there's no question. Just like, if you want to see community, look at the second generation. You can take a second generation kid from anywhere and put him in the same room and the best of friends. You take adults from the first generation, it's kind of hit or miss. You know? Especially when you make a committee. Right? Right? But the kids is guaranteed. Okay, you'll get two groups. You know, those who want to follow a little more strictly and those who don't want to follow. But as soon as the one that was loose becomes strict, then they're fine. No, but there's no baggage. You know? Because they have the same culture. That's why they're worth more. You get them to take up that inspiration to preach as the first generation does, you'll see results beyond imagination. Right? Like that. So that's the, you know. Yeah, does that make sense? I don't talk on it much because mostly I'm dealing with just getting the faith. So no one ever asks a practical question. Thank God. Anything else? Or? And rasa. Oh, how gain and safety in tattva and rasa connect? Everything in our philosophy, culture, everything you're going to find in any of the books that we talk about, you can divide down into three things. Sambandha, abhideya, prayojana. Sambandha will be your relationships. That means sambandha is your field. It's all the elements of the field and how the field interacts with each other and what results you get from combining the elements of the field. Like that. That's your sambandha. Then, depending upon what you want, what your goal is, therefore you're going to combine different ones to get that. So that's why sometimes particular purpose, you can say is goal, but at the same time it can be sambandha, depending upon how you're looking at it. Does that make sense? You know, A and B gets you C. Okay, you want C, therefore combine A and B. But if you don't want C, you want something else, you combine another thing. You know what I'm saying? So A and B will give you this result, but it's the need for the result that you call a prayojana. Right? That's the point. It got your result, but it's what is your need. That's what you're looking for. Because otherwise, there's many small results. Like, I want to play card tolls. So therefore, then the sambandha is, okay, there's card tolls, and then, you know, then there's my hand, right? And then there's the space in between. Okay, so that's how they're going to work. And I have these strings. But now there's also the element that my hands are here, and they have a thing, and they have arms and those motor situations, that by applying them, I can bridge the space between them, and I can get my goal of getting the card tolls. But that's not actually my goal. My goal is to play the card tolls. Right? So it's a smaller goal. So it's a purpose within. So it's still sambandha. Right? It'll be prayojana of sambandha, but it's still not, it's not actual the prayojana. It's not actually the goal. Right? Then, how to work it. Then you take your fingers and you stick it around and that, and then they play it in this way. So that's all the things. You bang it like this, you get this sound. You bang it like that, you get that sound. It's still all sambandha. But now I want this particular thing and that sound, so therefore I'm playing it in this way, that I'm playing it in that way, that's the Abhideya. Right? And that I need to get that result, that's the Prayojana. So your solid things are coming in your Sambandha. But as far as experience goes, it's in your Prayojana. Right? So who you are, what you are, who's in control and all that, that's the control. So therefore, of the two, the real thing is the Sambandha and the Prayojana. The Abhideya is how you're going to bridge the gap. Right? So in one sense, you can say the real thing is the Abhideya. That's why Govindaji is our deity. Because he is the Abhideya deity. So therefore, we're followers of Rupa Goswami. Right? Because it's what you're doing, that's where the rasa is tasted. Because what you're going to see is that, the activity. Your attraction to Krishna, your attachment to Krishna is manifest through what you do for Krishna. Therefore, the Abhideya is important. Right? But in here, when we're talking of it from tattva, then we're going to look at it for, you know, for the metaphysical aspect differently. Right? Because is that if you don't have the Sambandha and Prayojana right, it doesn't matter what you do in Abhideya, it won't work. Does that make sense? So therefore, you only consider Abhideya, or activity, when your relationship and your goal is right. Does that make sense? So therefore, the emphasis is always on these two points of our condition, I mean our polluted consciousness, which is control and enjoyment. So therefore, all things in the material world go back into those two. Every problem we have on any front is because of these two. We're trying to control and we're frustrated, we're trying to enjoy, we're frustrated. And that gives rise to anger. Therefore, what is it? Dita raga bhaya krodha. Bhaya fear, that's control. Like, you get fearful when you're not in control anymore. Right? And there's going to be loss. Right? So there's fear. But when we understand I'm servant of Krishna, I'm not this body, then there's nothing to lose. We're never fearful. We know Krishna is always there. Therefore, Prahlad Maharaj, he's not fearful. They're bringing him, you know, putting elephants and demons and poison. It doesn't matter to him because there's no fear. That's why it says in the Bhagavad, become fearless. When you become fearless, then you actually transcend. Because you can only become fearless if you understand I'm not this body, I'm serving the Krishna. So anytime we get too much in the controlling mood, we forget we're serving Krishna. It doesn't mean we can't control. Yudhishthira is controlling the world, but he doesn't forget he's serving Krishna. Therefore it works. Therefore everyone likes it. Right? So that controlling and joy. So therefore there's all kinds of synonyms of that controlling and enjoying. So fear is one of them. Attachment. You know, it means you have fear, you have control, you have your safety will come there. Intelligence will come there. The masculine principle will come there. That's all in one line. And the other side, that's attachment, enjoyment, the mind, feminine. You know, that's gain. So all those things are coming there. So you can take all these and on the spiritual platform, on the metaphysical platform, on the emotional platform, intellectual platform, social platform, medical platform, you know, mechanical platform, they still go in these two lines because that's all you have. The creation is created from Krishna. The creation is Krishna. Krishna is Satchit Ananda. So everything in the creation is going to be Satchit Ananda or the reflection of it. You know. So it can't function separately from this. So therefore, that's another reason that to say that there's something outside the Vedic culture that has an answer the Vedic culture has, that's just misinformation. How it would have? God's created it. No one else created it. They observed it. They're intelligent. They'll catch some things, but they can't catch everything. Therefore, the solutions don't actually solve the problem. Right? It's a formula. You take a formula. You have a problem with the leaders, right? Okay. That not you. I'm just saying this is a theoretical thing. Sorry about that. I didn't mean that. How do you say that? What do you call that? That pause? Yeah, it wasn't. So, you meaning generic you, just like, you know, okay. The one, okay, let's do it. One has a problem with authority. They make their statements to authority, but they don't have the influence and power because they themselves aren't very organized or qualified. The leaders don't listen. So then somebody amongst them has a brain, gets a good idea. Okay, so if you don't have power by influence, you can have create that influence by numbers, by mass. Right? Because bourgeois goes by numbers. Shooters go by numbers. Right? That's the general principle. It's like that. Brahmin Kshatriyas work by Shastra. Vaishya Shudra works by numbers. More numbers, better. So they go to the people. They get the people. They start a revolution. They kick out the nobility. Right? The leaders. Then, for a short time, everybody's happy. Right? Right? Then what happens? Then it all falls into chaos because they are bourgeois. They're not actually leaders. And they don't actually have a solution because they don't know all the things. They don't know what a leader knows. And then what happens? Falls into chaos. Then you get people that come up and take absolute control. Right? You look at every revolution, that's what happened. The only place where it didn't happen was America, because knowing this, then you had George Washington create, using the Roman and the Greek systems, combine those to make something that would avoid that. It creates other problems, but whatever it is, you know. But it creates that from happening. Right? It's also interesting to note that he was, I think, 21 at the time. I think, what is it? Huh? Oh, well, maybe when they made the Constitution, but when he won the battles, he was 21. And the other generals were 19. And that, I think it was Benjamin Disraeli. He was the Prime Minister of England, I think, in the 1800s. He said, everything great done in history was all done by youth. Unfortunately, the first generation forgets that. That when they were youth, they did things great. And the next generations, they figure they're kids, they can't do anything great. So, where were we? Oh yeah. So this has that problem, is that it's seen, but it's not learned from. Does that make some sense? So now, we use the same things ourselves. Right? We have leadership. We have a committee. We get the mass. We throw out the leaders. And then everything's downhill since then. We use the same principle ourselves. Does that make sense? So the point is it's the modes of nature. It's going to function the way Krishna created. It's not going to function the way they think it's. Right? It's the modes of nature work according to God's directions, not according to our whims. So that's why it behooves us to learn how they work. And Krishna Gita tells how they work. Right? That's the point. We become thoughtful, manisha. We think, we apply, and then we look. It's said that perfection in, you know, theory or in shabda is when we see it in pratyaksha. Right? You take the shabda or authority, we hear from the scriptures, then we contemplate it, and then from inference and this and that, and then we get at the point where we can see it in our daily life with our senses. So that's problem. When shabda is seen in pratyaksha, that means you have realization. So that's the descending system. You come from the top and bring it down. The ascending means you look, you take your senses, try to analyze that and come up with a conclusion. So you'll get some things because you've analyzed, you know, to the degree you analyze well, you'll get that degree of result. Those who are better analyzers, people still talk about them. People who don't. You know, so that degree then to you know, how you say, that the more problems they solve and put together, the greater they're considered. But unless you get it complete, then there's always going to be a problem. So that's why, unless you include Krishna, you can't really solve everything. You just can't. It's impossible. Because all contradictions are resolved in Krishna. Like that. You don't have everything resolved before that, because he is the end of the line. He said, the real buck stops there. So it works like that. What was your question again? I know that what I said had something to do with it. Oh yeah, about the controlling and enjoying. And what was the other aspect? Oh, tattva and rasa. Okay, so tattva will be your sambandha aspect. Rasa is what the experience. Rasa is experience. Sambandha is the field in which that experience is gained. That's what we started with. So that's where you have to have both. Unless you can apply both, you don't have it. So generally, because, you know, we're enthusiasts, generally take one or the other. That's why you have the razor's edges in the middle, and then you have very broad expanses on each side. So it's just like the sahajiyas, that's the overdoing sambandha, overdoing prayojana, and the smartas are overdoing the other. So that's what it says. You have razor's edge down the middle, and then you have the sahajiyas and the smartas on both sides. So as Mataji mentioned, it's not a matter of compassion. It's define compassion. As soon as someone says, we're not compassionate, that's okay. It's a good point. Yes, one must be compassionate. It's a natural, inherent quality of the soul. It's an inherent quality in devotional service. It's an inherent quality in the Vedic culture. But define compassion. The point is there is not a common definition of compassion. That's why there's no community. Why is it so hard to find a common definition of compassion? Probably because either we don't read Prabhupada's books, or we read them and they're nice, but you know, reality is something else. Because Prabhupada says, what is compassion? If you don't give the soul Krishna consciousness, you're not actually compassionate. So what is the best for the Krishna consciousness of the individual, of the relationship of that individual, and of the community? You know, smaller and greater? That's a solution. But to know that, you have to first know what is community. You know? So then you have to know what is an individual. You have to know what a relationship. You have to know what relationship is. Just like you have the rasgula and you have the tongue. Okay. Now, of the two, technically, who is the enjoyer? The rasgula or the tongue? Well, everybody will say the tongue, but it's actually the rasgula. Because the tongue only tastes the taste of sweetness of the rasgula. But the rasgula is more than that. So the tongue brings out the sweetness from the rasgula and is able to appreciate. So you have rasa on that platform. So rasa is going on, but technically it's the rasgula. But the enjoyment is more in the enjoyed than the enjoyer. Therefore, Krishna comes as his devotee. Because when he interacts with the devotee, their happiness is millions of times greater than his, even though he's the enjoyer. Right? But the thing falls apart, it starts to become weird when we get down to the sensual platform, we're dealing with dead matter. That's why things reverse on us. That's why we make mistakes. Unless we're trained, one doesn't know. Just like you say, you know, you take the man and the woman, who's the enjoyer? Right? You suddenly say the man, but the one who actually enjoys is the woman. Right? Means we have in the Bhagavatam is there was that one king. Right? He had this curse. He kept going back. One month the man, one month the woman, one month. Like this. So they had to work this out. The citizens are going, this is nuts. You know, one day we have a man, one day we have a woman. You know, everybody was going nuts. So then they came up and they said, okay, we'll work this out for you. Choose one or the other. Which one do you choose? He said, woman. He says, because the happiness they gain from the children and all that, and the feelings and the material, I mean, in other words, they are material energy. So the taste of material energy, the woman experiences, the man tries to experience, he doesn't. It's like he's got the bottle of honey, right? And he's licking the outside of the bottle of honey. And he thinks, you know, and he's licking where he wants to lick on the bottle of honey. And he thinks he's enjoying the bottle of honey, but he's not. right? So that's the way it works. So then, therefore, we get it backwards, unless one knows. So that's why one has to know both, the rasa and the tattva. Because if you only know rasa, that ends up the sahajis. You only know tattva, that ends up smartness. You know both, it's balanced. As far as Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, or any of the acharyas, can explain the technicalities of rasa and the taste of rasa, to the same degree, they can go into the metaphysics of, you know, the ontology and epistemology and etymology of the philosophy and grammar that they're explaining it with. It means they can explain even why that word was used and the root of that word. You know? And one might say, oh, in English you can't do that. Prabhupada does that. He makes his own words up. He creates his own. When you read it, it's a different kind of grammar. Why? Because he's using Sanskrit grammar. He's not using English grammar. English grammar is a small part of Sanskrit grammar. You know Sanskrit grammar, and you know how to get English to work like Sanskrit, then you have this kind of English. That's why this English has potency, because what he says is what he means. And other people, they're using English grammar, that what you say may not be what you mean. Because that's not the point. The point is not to make the point. A few people want to make a point, so they make a point. And those people are considered great writers. So Prabhupada knows how to make a point, so it works. So that's the thing, you have to get that balance. So technically they can explain everything. So that's the way it is. If you have a balance, it means as far you go one way, you go the other. So it's natural that as if we want to expand, we want to advance, then the more we know about the rasa, the more we have to know about the tattva. The people specialize in rasa or specialize in tattva only. And then there's a problem. There's not a balance. So that's the thing. You have to get that balance. So that's why both are studied. Because by one, then you'll have, you know, you look at it one way, but the other you look at the other, and that combination makes it work. First, it works up to getting us out of the material world. After getting out of the material world, then it just works on rasa. Because it has its own logic. Right? Like that. It has its own logic. Does that make sense? So I think maybe we should end here before that gets too much. Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhakta Vrinda ki, Jainita Gaurupin.
Is there any questions?